Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our second show this morning. Where are they now?
What an engineer. He messes with you. He's looking. He's waiting. I love it. It's perfect.
Well, Devin lets me know when to go live.
That's right. And we're still here. We're still awake.
Yeah.
Morning show. We had fun. Good. You like our shirts?
I love our shirts.
We have, if you guys are not looking at the Wizard of Oz, hang on, let me stand up so you can see it. Wizard of Oz.
Oh, let me
shirts.
Let
yeah,
me
let's stand up too. So they can see it.
I listen.
There you go. Bobby, there you go. The Wizard of Oz shirts and...
And the Tin Man.
And the Tin Man and Alay.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about our guest,
Hawaiian Lay.
About the Wizard of Oz, about her Hawaiian dancing, lots of fun stuff.
A lot of a great show this
morning.
Oh, we
got a little surprise for her, too, just before commercials. He's got that. Oh, beautiful. All right, Bobby, what's our phone number here?
773-763-9278.
Okay, let's get ready here.
Let's
because
get ready to
who
rock.
Who has not seen The Wizard of Oz? That's all I got to question. All right, I got some quotes here from her webpage. It's here. It came out of the envelope. I think I'm going to cry. Turns out people like it a lot. What are we talking about, Bobby? Let's see. Our guest has been an American reporter, a television host. Worked at KTV. You Channel 2 in San Francisco for over 20 years until her retirement in 1992. She was born in Hawaii, grew up in Hollywood. I'm not going to give you all the facts because she's the author of the book, The Munchkin Diary, My Personal Yellow Brick Road, one of the world's last remaining munchkin. And I hope she doesn't mind, but she's 90 years young. Let's welcome today's guest, Betty Ann Bruno. Good morning, Betty.
Good morning, Betty. Welcome.
Good morning, Art and Bobby. That's quite an introduction.
Yeah, you know, we play radio on the weekends, you know.
We're thrilled to have you on our program this morning.
I don't know if I told you, but Bobby has a painting company. He's a retired police officer, security. I'm an architect, and we do this on a weekend for fun.
Yeah, we're having a great time.
We really are.
I know that kind of agenda. Well, you know, you've got to stay busy all the time. Keeps you out of the local bars, you know.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And we had a guest this morning about olive oil. So we're going to start drinking olive oil, right, Bobby?
Yeah.
Gets us to, what, 150?
Extra virgin olive oil.
Yeah. Okay. Betty, tell us a little bit about your bio, where you were born and school and all that good stuff. And then your favorite sports team. Or you can do that first.
Well, I'll do that first. My favorite sports team, of course, being from the San Francisco Bay Area, are the Niners.
Ah, so. Very nice.
Oh, excellent.
Very nice. Very nice. We're all ears. Tell us where you were born and all that good stuff.
Okay. I was born in a small town in the middle of Oahu, called Wahiawa. My mother was a school teacher there. She's Chinese Hawaiian. And my father was in the Signal Corps stationed at Schofield Barracks, which was right next door to Wahiawa. He was a Dutch Irishman from Wichita Falls, Texas. Mm. So this was way back when. And I love my father's story about how he got out of Wichita Falls. That's in the book. I won't bother with that here, but it was very interesting. Basically, he gambled his way to wealth, and when he got out of the Signal Corps in the early 30s, he and his younger brother, who was right there beside him gambling in the Army, he always won, bought a quarter of a block in Hollywood, right across the street from 20th Century Fox Studios. And my Uncle Ace was as much an extrovert as my father was quiet, humble businessman. And my Uncle Ace had a big cafe called Ace Kane's Cafe, and the movie people frequented it a lot. So I grew up in the first part of my life surrounded by people who were always performing in the movies, on the stage. Mm-hmm. My Uncle Ace had three floor shows every night. So all the dancers and comedians and everything were right there. We lived right next door to the cafe. But when I was 8 years old, my father's doctor told him to get out of the Los Angeles basin, that the air was not good for him. And the word smog had not been invented yet.
Okay.
It was in the late 80s. But the doctor told him, go out, move to Palm Springs, move to the desert where the air is clean, get out of the Los Angeles basin. So we moved to, well, we tried to move to Palm. We went out and looked at Palm Springs. It was 120 degrees the day we went out there to look. So that eliminated Palm Springs. We settled in a small agricultural valley on the other side of the mountain from Palm Springs called Hemet San Jacinto. And that's where I grew up. Went small little grammar school, 20 kids in a class. Four of them were named Betty, by the way. And
really?
Wow, that's something. Yeah, that's great.
Betty, what is your Hawaiian name?
My Good Hawaiian question. Name is Ka'ihilani. Ka'ihilani, but of course nobody calls me that. I use it now in the shows that we do because I have a Hawaiian dance company called Hula Mai, which means come on here and dance.
That's why we got our liaison today. Bobby, you're going to have to dance. I didn't tell you, but she's going to teach us a dance over the phone. And I'm just kidding, Bobby. I know your back's hurting.
Yep. That might help, though. It might help.
I think good for your good for your back, actually. My mother taught me a few steps in hula. She wasn't a dancer. She was a singer. But she taught a few steps. And when we were in Hollywood, of course, the movies were all around. And we took singing and dancing lessons. At Bud Murray's studio. Bud Murray, the brother of Arthur Murray, you know, who has the big name
right.
in ballroom thing. Yeah, and Bud was a theatrical dance studio person. So we were in movies. First movie I was in, I was 4.5 years old. It was called Hurricane with Dorothy L'Amour and John Hall. And my brother and I were just little village kids running around the set. That was what we were supposed to do. And then I had, well... You have to read my book. I had my first and only nude scene in Hurricane. That was funny. It was really funny because I almost drove the whole crew and the director crazy.
And the book she's talking about is The Munchkin Diary, My Personal Yellow Brick Road by Betty Ann Bruno. We got it on Amazon. Oh, my God, the pictures and everything. I didn't finish it off because there's so much detail. I love it. I can't wait to finish this book. You know?
I'm really proud of it. You know, I wrote the book after I retired from Channel 2. I wrote the stories of my life for my three grown sons who I thought needed the details of my... I wanted them to have the details of my life because my mother would never tell me her details.
Mm. Okay.
And so I did that for them as soon as I retired. So I wrote the book... 20 years ago.
Wow.
Okay.
I wrote stories 20 years ago, and I just printed them out, gave them to my kids, gave them to my, you know, my really close friends, other people in the family, and let it go at that. And the stories were all in three-ring binders, and I printed them out on my computer.
Bobby.
That was, well, 2 years ago, I was the treasure artist here in Sonoma, California, where I live and where I have my hula company. And that's a great honor. And so all the reporters around were interviewing me, and they were trying to make the connection between my career as a hard-knuckle reporter here in the Bay Area for 20 years, and why was I teaching hula in retirement? You know, they're trying to bridge that gap. And I finally, one reporter who was persistent with her questions, I said, well, here, I wrote a story about that. Why don't you take the story home and read it? Maybe you'll understand. You still have questions? Come back and we'll talk about it tomorrow. She took the story home. I called it The Who and the Hula.
Okay. What's in here? Yeah.
Yeah, she brought it back the next day and she said, oh, this is a great story. I said, oh, yeah. I wrote about, you know, 15 stories for my kids. Her jaw dropped and she asked if she could read the rest of the stories. And I said, well, sure, you know. So I put the Who and the Hula back in the three-ring binder and gave her the whole binder and said, sure, take it home, read the stories, and enjoy.
Wow.
She brought them back about 2 or 3 days later, and she said, Betty Ann, you've got to publish these. And I said, no, I don't have time. I'm really busy, you know. I'm really busy with my dance troupe and teaching classes. I'm teaching 3 days a week. We had shows every week. And all over the valley, we dance you know, for the retirement homes and private parties, weddings, birthdays. We even danced, well, a couple of weeks ago, we danced at a celebration of life. That was very...
We have a beautiful picture of you on there dancing with the group on Facebook Live for whoever's wants to see it. We have the picture of you with Judy Garland. So we have it on. And I'll send you the both links, the Facebook Live and the audio, tomorrow when we get it. So you'll enjoy looking at it.
That would be lovely.
Oh, yeah. And Devin, yeah, thank you for putting that up. That looks great. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Devin's one of our best engineers. You know, he knows how to just do it right and still leave us on the camera. You're all right, you know.
That's exactly what engineers are supposed to do. Hi, Devin. Thank you very much.
He's waving. He's over where his mic's over on the other side. Our number is 773-763-9278. Anytime you have a question for Betty Ann, just call. Or maybe, you know, but... Betty, you got a lot of story here. Keep going, please. Go ahead, Bobby. You got a question?
No, I just want our listeners to give us a call if you have any stories about the Wizard of Oz you'd like to share with Betty and us. That'd be great to hear from you.
Well, the Wizard of Oz, let's talk about that.
Okay.
Because I had no idea when I danced in that Munchkin scene that it would be a life-changing kind of thing. I mean, such an important influence. Because I had just turned 7. My mother saw an audition notice on the Bud Murray, a bulletin board, took me to the audition said they wanted little girls who could dance and sing, under 4.5 feet tall, and who could act terrified. So my mother took me to the audition. I made the cut. What they did was they had 12 little girls who could... They kept us in the background. They just wanted us to fill out the village because they had hired 124 midgets, the singer midgets, from all over the world. They had recruited them from every midget in Europe and, you know, everywhere in the world came to Hollywood to be in that movie. But the director wanted a few more bodies up in the village, just filling out. So he always, the call to the set was like this. He'd say, okay, you know, everybody in your places, everybody on the set, kids in the back, kids in the back.
Wow.
You never find my face. But it was a 3-week gig when I was a 7-year-old child. And we sang and danced. There was Judy Garland on the set, Billy Burke as Glinda the Good Witch, and Margaret Hamilton as the Bad Witch. And I was there, of course, they did... When Margaret Hamilton finished making threats that she's going to kill, she's going to kill me and my little dog too, and she sinks down into the patio of the plaza there on the set. She went down a trap door and she caught on fire, and she was badly burned.
Ooh! Wow.
By one of the crew members who got some water on her and on her face, she was not as seriously injured as she might have been. But we were all there, and it was, you know, I just remember that as a pretty traumatic scene. But mostly it was just glorious. It was the Depression, and there was no color TV. There were no, you know, Marine Worlds or Disneylands or anything. There were no colored movies, actually. You know, that was one of the first Technicolor movies I think Gone with the Wind, came out.
Yeah. Now, somebody said to me, is it true, do you know, or Bobby or Devin, half of the movie was black and white and the other half was color? Or is that just...
It was all black and white, I think.
Oh.
The Wizard of Oz?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean Gone with the Wind?
No, The Wizard of Oz.
No, the black and white. It's part black and white. The part of the movie that takes place in Kansas.
Oh, okay. I got it now. That's why. Okay. Yeah, I remember that now.
And then when Dorothy comes out of her house, which has landed in Munchkinland and killed the Wicked Witch, she comes out and sees this glorious set and the color, and she says to Toto, "We're not in Kansas anymore."
Remember that?
Yeah. Yes. Wow.
And from the movie. So, and that's the way I think all of us felt when we first saw that Munchkin set, that we were somewhere else other than where we were used to being, because the Depression world was pretty much black and white. You know, the movies that you got to go see were all black and white, and people were pretty, well, it was hard times. Kids didn't have colored toys like they do today, you know, all the colorful stuff.
Hey, I used to get my toys. God bless my parents. We were poor. We used to go to Salvation Army and get a toy. So, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Well, my toys, when I was young, my parents weren't poor. My father was a successful businessman, but they were very strict about they didn't want to spoil us. I had four dolls, period. That was it. And so I had Hollywood. And then grew up on the farm. That was wonderful. And I have a long chapter in the book about that. And my best friend was my little pig named Tiny. And my dog, Poochie. And that was wonderful. That my dream of having a horse came true, and then it turned into a nightmare.
too much work or too wild?
Well, it was an unfortunate circumstance. My brother threw a rock on the first day I got on my saddle horse. Mm-hmm. I was 8 years old. My dad had just brought the horse back from the auction. Here's your saddle horse, Betty Ann. I used to dream about having a horse. And my brother threw rocks at it, said it was his turn to ride.
Oh.
And threw rocks at it. The horse bucked and took off and just galloped a mile, and I hung on for my life, and scared me so much. It kind of ruined the
the adventure. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Yeah. But
yeah.
Thank God you're fine.
Yeah, thank God you're okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm just a big scare, but I had a wonderful education and excellent schools. California in those days, you know, was vying with New York as the best school system in the country. So I had excellent teachers, wonderful background, graduated from Hemet High School and went to Stanford, majored in political science. I wanted to be a city manager, and I loved local nonpartisan politics. Things about charter reform. For some reason, I get very excited about things like that.
Wow. Before we go to our call, I read somewhere, were you on the CIA or somewhere? Or did you want to work for the CIA?
Well, on graduation day, a recruiter from the CIA, from the Central Intelligence Agency, came and interviewed me. One of my professors had recommended me. And yes, and so I had a job and went to Washington and worked for the agency for a couple of years. And that was a wonderful experience because if you're a political science major and you go to Washington, D.C., that's like going to Mecca, huh?
Yeah. Bobby, do you have the clearance to hear this story? You were a police officer. Yeah. I don't think I do.
We got a caller.
We got a caller? All right. Who's on the phone?
All right. Good morning. Welcome to our show. Where are they now?
Good morning. Good morning, everybody. I have a question and just a little something I knew.
Yes, Paul, go ahead.
In the old days, there was a bar at 63rd and just a little west of Pulaski. I think it was a library there now, like a block or so, in Chicago, and it was a Midget's Tap or the Midget's Bar, and a husband and wife, and they were in the Wizard of Oz, and the whole bar was custom made for them because of their height and everything. And it was a successful bar for years. And my question to your guest is regarding the Wizard of Oz. I don't know if it's a rumor or not, and I'd like to get it cleared up, that the treatment of the midgets was terrible living conditions, very low pay, the food wasn't good, that it wasn't a good thing for the way the midgets were taken care of on that movie. I was wondering if that was true or not.
It's probably little people's probably the better word nowadays, huh? But go ahead.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I know. I understand. Go ahead.
Well, let's talk about the
response on that. Thanks.
Yes, Betty. Please give us how was the food and all that good stuff?
Okay, well, first let's talk about the PC, the PC-ness of little people versus midgets.
Right.
The midgets themselves called themselves midgets.
Oh, okay.
And when I met, saw them again at an Oz convention in the mid-90s, after I retired from Channel 2, I was able to go to one of those things. They're all over the country. It's huge. There were about six or seven midgets who were still well enough to travel in those days, and they went to all the conventions. They referred to themselves as midgets.
Okay.
I think nothing pejorative about that. Now, what happened, the word little people came from a dwarf named Billy Barty, very nice man. I met him, and a lot of people know him through the movies because he's starred in a lot of movies. He called there's a difference between dwarfs and midgets.
Oh, what is that?
It's a matter of proportionality.
Okay.
A midget is a perfectly proportioned small person.
Oh, okay.
And a dwarf has normal size head and torso, but diminutive arms and legs.
Okay.
Therefore, they are disproportionate. And Billy Barty in the 70s started calling dwarfs little people.
Ah.
And term, and it was a political thing.
Yeah.
Or right, little people, and not to be discriminated against and not to be shunned and so on.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, they don't want to discriminate against them, and they don't want them to feel bad.
Right. So but I think that how was the food at the Wizard of Oz? I think Paul wanted to know, was there good food and treated well there?
Well, the food during the shoot and when you're working there was up to you. You could bring your lunch or go to the studio cafeteria.
Okay.
So, as far as I know, here's they were Singer midgets, and under contract with a guy named Leo Singer. Each one of them was paid $100 a week, which was a lot of money in 1938, which was when the movie was shot. It was released in 39.
See, Devin, you're making the right rate. Go ahead, Betty.
Okay. He kept $50 of it and gave $50 to the midgets. So they made $50 a week.
Okay.
Wow.
Now,
he paid for their hotel rooms and their food, which I think, you can't even $50 a day, you can't buy dinner at most hotels these days for $50. But in those days, that was probably adequate. The hotel cost, the room probably cost $1 or $2.
Oh, wow.
A night.
Yeah,
and it was, maybe $1 or $2 a week. I don't really know. But I've read about them, they all loved that work. And midgets from all over the world clamored to be in that film. Because
oh,
that was
wonderful.
Good jobs. It was also a way to get to the United States, and many of them stayed here and made successful lives of them, for themselves. What was wonderful was when the 50-year anniversary of the film happened, there started to be all these Oz festivals all over the country. And the midgets, of course, went. They got paid to go and sign autographs all day, be celebrities. And so the Oz festivals became a way of life for them, and they became their identity, their star-studded identity. So it was nice.
Right.
And
I hear, I read that they still stop you for your autograph, huh?
Well.
Go ahead, tell us about that.
For me, it was a childhood memory, a wonderful one. But I didn't go around talking about it, and I grew up. I'm not that tall, but I'm 5'2". I've now shrunk an inch. I'm now 5'1". But I was 5'2 for most of my adult life. And I had this wonderful job on Channel 2 as a news reporter. One day in the newsroom, I'm typing up my story, and two of the editors are saying goodbye to people that are leaving on vacation. And I said, well, just out of curiosity, I said, well, where are you guys going on your vacation? And they said, we're going to an Oz convention. We're gonna. It's in Winky Land this year, so we're gonna go. And it's a fun. I said, "Oh, what's an Oz convention?" And they said, "Well, you know, it's a lot of people gather and in a town, and we all dress up like characters in the movie, and everybody has a good fun." And I said, "Oh, that's funny." I said, "I was a Munchkin in that movie when I was a little girl."
And they didn't believe you, did they?
Yeah, they probably said, "What? Wow, that's amazing."
It is amazing. I love it. I love it.
After I said that, you could have heard a pin drop in the newsroom. Everything stopped. I think even the teletype machine stopped.
Wow.
Wow, that's unbelievable.
Oh, wow, Ellie.
And they said, "What?" And I said, "Well," and I tried to play it down because it was, you know, it was not. It was something I had done as a child. I mean, I didn't want to pretend to that it was anything else. But within 30 seconds, everybody in the station knew there was a Munchkin in the house. And the next day, the local radio stations were calling for interviews. The local papers were calling for interviews. It was bigger than anything I ever did on television.
Okay. We got another caller. Who's on the phone?
Ron.
Ron,
good
morning,
morning,
Ron.
Ron. Welcome to our show. Where
good
are they
morning,
now?
Gentlemen.
Hi, Ron.
Does she remember Parnell St. Aubin, who was a Munchkin in the movie? He was a fixer with his wife, Mary Ellen, on the southwest side in Chicago. They ran the midget club, which the gentleman was mentioning a little earlier,
yeah.
Around 63rd and Pulaski.
Betty, do you remember them?
I do not. The children were kept segregated from the adult midgets. The midgets had to be 18 years old in order to be in the movie.
Mm.
And no children. And we children were kept in the background. We were not supposed to socialize at all with the midgets. And I don't know why, but we were kept in school, actually, when we weren't working on the set. We were in our classroom. So I didn't meet, met some of the midgets when, you know, in a few seconds before we had to work on the set, but we did not socialize with each other. So I didn't know them.
Yeah.
Later on, Margaret Pellegrini and Ruth Duccini were at the convention, and then, of course, that was, 60 years later.
Hmm.
Very, very nice people, wonderful people.
Wow.
And we became friends and, corresponded. But the last one died. Jerry Marin died in, I think it was 2018 or 2019. He was the last of the midgets. But just salt of the earth, really.
Well, Ron, thanks for calling in.
Thank you, Ron.
And listening to our program.
All right, before we go to commercials, we got a surprise for you, Betty. We missed something. Go ahead, play that. It's live radio. It takes a second here.
Okay.
Here he goes.
Ha'olila hana, ha'olila hana, happy birthday to you. Ha'olila hana, ha'olila hana, happy birthday to you. Happy, happy birthday, happy, happy birthday.
So I think we missed your birthday, didn't we, a couple weeks ago?
You know what? That Wikipedia...
Yeah, is that true? That's what I wanted to ask you.
It's not my birth. My birthday is October 1st.
Ah, okay.
I turned 90 last October 1st, and I did have a big, big party, and I wished all of you could have been there. It was really...
Okay, if you decide to have another one, Bobby and I will fly out. What do you think, Bobby?
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely. And my son's moving to Hollywood because he makes films. He's just graduated from school, so... Well, when we come out there, we'll go for coffee or lunch or dinner, or I'll come see you perform with the group.
Absolutely. Listen, when you come out, we'll do a show for you. Bobby and Art, you're both our guest room is always ready.
Oh, thank you.
That's so nice of you.
All right, let's go to commercials. We'll be back.
All right, we'll be back.
Today's show is brought to you by Coors Light. Must be 21 and older to purchase. Please drink responsibly.
Do y'all flip those flops? Do your records or CDs skip? Does your antique slot machine not award a jackpot? Unique Machine Repair can help. Call us at 708-606-3642. We've been repairing pinball, jukebox, arcades, and American-made antique slot machines for over 20 years. Give us a call at 708-606-3642. We offer on-site repair of your equipment. Call us at Unique Machine Repair, 708-606-3642.
At Happy Pet, we strive to provide the most professional and personalized in-home pet care available. A Happy Pet for all your dog walking, house sitting, and overnight care, as well as vacation care services for all your furry, scaly, and feathery friends. Rain or shine, we promise we'll be there for you and for them. For more information, visit www.ahappypet.com or give us a call at 847-962-1807. A Happy Pet, where your pet is happy too.
Teach your students the joys of science with Denoyer Geppert. We're the USA's leading manufacturer of anatomical models for education, with a number of our products on display at the Made in Chicago Museum. From autographed anatomy to zoology models, we have something for all ages. Place an order online today at denoyer.com.
Their mission at Barrage Chiropractor and Wellness is to help you live a life of abundant health and wellness through a chiropractic lifestyle for you and your whole family. Barrage Chiropractor has been serving the north side of Chicago and the north suburbs since 2008. Dr. Barrage loves helping people of all ages feel better naturally without the use of drugs and surgery. With Dr. Barrage, you will see so many positive changes in your lifestyle on a daily basis. If pain has been stopping you from living your best life, Dr. Barrage can help. Call him at 773-545-9379 or find them at www.barragechiropractor.com.
Abbott Painting. Painting and decorating since 1973. Abbott Painting specializes in commercial, industrial, and residential properties. Abbott Painting is a licensed general contractor, whether it's a wall, ceiling, floor, cabinet, tower, deck, fence, or anything you can imagine. Abbott Painting, with their 48 years of experience, applies premium paint finishes or wall coverings that will exceed your expectations. Call Abbott Painting and mention this ad for a 10% discount. For your free estimate, call 773-725-9800. Again, that's 773-725-9800. Thank you.
Family Entertainment by JJ. JJ is an Arlington Heights-based family entertainer. He is an award-winning balloon artist and clown. He is also a very funny magician and a face painter who draws quick, simple designs to keep things moving. Ask JJ about his big bubble fun and his link to the North Pole. JJ will help you plan your party by using his years of experience as a family entertainer. Use JJ for birthday parties, corporate events, schools, and picnics. He also makes childcare, nursing home, and hospital visits. JJ has been entertaining children and adults of all ages for over 30 years. Call now for party planning and pricing. You can reach him at 847-483-4520. JJ is a Midwest Clown Association Hall of Fame inductee. Again, 847-483-4520.
Accomplished Realtor Jenna Moreau would love to talk to you about your next move. Jenna represents both buyers and sellers and is a part of At Properties team. The housing market is experiencing a great deal of activity due to the lowest interest rate in years. So whether you are looking, listing, or lending, or just learning, give Jenna a call today at 773-320-9985 or email her at jennamoreau@properties.com to help you with your next move. Thank you.
You want to feel secure, a sense of trust that will endure. Jennings' reputation rides with you.
Welcome to JenningsChevrolet.com. Jennings Chevrolet in Glenview is a family-owned business that's been serving Chicagoland since 1958. How has Jennings remained in business while so many of our competitors faded away? The simple reason is that Jennings delivers the low prices plus the quality sales and service experience that other dealers only promise. Every dealership pays the exact same amount to the factory for a new Chevy, but some dealers advertise phony low prices online just to lure you in. At JenningsChevrolet.com, every buyer qualifies for our lowest advertised price. The low price you see is the low price you pay. Jennings has one of the area's largest inventories of new Chevrolets and quality pre-owned vehicles. If you can't find what you're searching for, we'll get it through our express locator system. Thank you for visiting JenningsChevrolet.com.
Jennings reputation.
Hey, listen, I can't remember when I didn't dance. As a child, I took up tap dancing, and of course, my mother taught me a couple of little hulas. What I really wanted to do was toe dancing, but that didn't happen. Let's welcome our guests back, Betty Ann Bruno. Welcome back, Betty.
Betty, thanks for coming back. You see, we find these little lines, so...
That's off my website.
You have a beautiful website. I love it. Whoever put it together, great, great website.
My husband and I put it together.
Wow. It's amazing. You're amazing, Betty. Yeah. You're amazing.
He was a cameraman, news cameraman, and editor at Channel 2. That's where we met.
Okay.
Both of us. We've been together about 45 years, so.
God bless.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. Now, any of your children in kind of film or movies or anything like that?
Yes and no. My middle son is a wonderful percussionist. He goes by the name of Kalani, is Kalani Music, and he travels all over, or he did before COVID, traveled all over the world. He teaches teachers how to teach music. And percussion and drum circles and things like that. When he was younger, he played with Yanni.
Oh, and, okay.
Wow. Nice.
Headliner people, playing percussion. My kids are now old. I can't believe they're so old. I'm going to have my number one son is going to be 60 later this year. Can you believe that?
Wow.
And no, because
60 years young.
Yeah. I mean, Betty... I've told you this, and I've told Devin, you don't sound your age. God bless you.
Yeah,
wow. I mean, you said you turned 90. You sound like you're like 45, 50.
Yep.
Well, that's what I think, 45 or 50. You know, I have always looked younger than I was. When I was 15, I looked about 11 and hated it. When I was 20... about maybe 12 or 13. When I was 30, I was 16. So it was difficult. I've always looked younger than I was. But now, I love it. I mean, I'm 90. I like having the energy of a younger person. And, you know, people tell me I don't look 90. I don't know what you're supposed to look like when you're 90.
Right. I mean, we have your picture up on Facebook, and you're dancing here, and you don't look, you know.
Yeah.
That's right. Like you guys. You got to just keep on trucking and keep on having fun.
That's it.
Do things with joy. And to heck with things. If you don't want to do something and you think it's going to be boring or harmful or too hard. I mean, whatever. Don't do it.
That's right. That's right. Got a question, a text message. What other films have you been in, they'd like to know? From one of our close fans, Val.
Okay. Well, in the 30s, Hollywood was in love with Hawaii and all things Polynesian. So we were in a lot of movies, always as extras, always, you know, just filling in the background or maybe dancing at a luau scene or something like that. Hawaii Calls, Aloma of the South Seas. There was a movie that was a short subject. I'd never seen it before because I was never able to track it down. And it was on television. It was on the computer. Is it television?
No, Turner Classic.
It was on Turner Classic Movies a couple of weeks ago, and it's called The Grand Heart. It's an 11-minute short subject about Father Damien.
Okay, you're in it. We've got to find it. What's the title again?
It's called The Grand Heart. The Great Heart.
The Great Heart. Okay.
It's probably, my scene is about 10 seconds. And I remember shooting it so clearly. I was a little girl. I was probably 6 years old. This was before The Wizard of Oz. 6 years old, and my movie mother was, you know, and I were walking along a little path, and a leper, an old man leper, comes along, confronts us, and it scares me so much, I drop my doll. My mother pulls me out of the leper's way. He falls and collapses on my doll. Father Damien, who has just arrived at Molokai that day, comes over and helps the old man get up, turns him over and sees there's no face. Ooh. And then he realizes that this is leprosy. So he helps the old man get up. The old man, you know, rushes away. And then Father Damien picks up my doll and hands it to me, or hands it out to me. I reach for it, and then my movie mother pulls me away because it's been touched by the leper, of course. She pulls me away and rushes me off.
Okay.
So
we'll have to find that movie for you. Bobby, we got a question, wow. Huh? We got somebody on the phone?
Yeah, good morning. Welcome to our show.
Hi. I have a question for our esteemed guest.
Yes.
I'd like to know, how did they get the voices of the Munchkins when they were singing? Did they all sing in that high voice, or was it manipulated?
Good question.
That is a good question, and I am not sure that I have the correct answer. That's been debated over the years, and the midgets, I'm trying to recall what their voices sounded like in real life.
Okay.
That's a good question.
Yeah. We'll have to do some research on that.
Wow. And I'm not sure there are answers that are forthcoming on that. There are a lot of books have been written about the filming of the movie. John Fricka, Stephen Cox, both really well-known books about The Wizard of Oz. Maybe they found the answers. I don't know. But that is an excellent.
I still remember their voices singing. It was so cute. It really was.
Bobby, yes, next I'm week you're singing. Well, thank you for listening
for
us and joining us.
And listening to our program.
Okay.
Have a great day.
Have a great one. All right. We're getting close to that time already, huh? We're going to have our buddy come on in a few minutes. Richie Z is going to talk about The Wizard of Oz and how Frank wrote it here in 1890. So, Betty, you're welcome to stay and listen, or we'll send you the tape. But is there anything you want to plug? Any shows coming up? I mean, any new books?
Oh, thanks very much. I still write stuff, but it's really just for my dancers and for us. And I'm coming to the Oz Stravaganza. I'm coming your way, actually.
Where?
I'm going to Chittenango, New York, the first weekend in June, because they're having the Oz Stravaganza. That's the oldest Oz festival in the country.
Wow.
Wow.
Interesting.
Okay. All right. Why don't you make a stop in Chicago? We'll take you to dinner.
Yeah, we'll take
or
you
lunch.
To Gibson's. Or
yeah.
Wherever you like.
Wherever you go. You coming with your husband?
Yes.
Well,
yes,
why don't you guys stop in here and call me and you come to Chicago. We'll go to dinner. We'll go to lunch. Whatever you want to do, you know.
Okay. Thank you. I think they've already made my travel arrangements.
Okay.
I love Chicago.
We'll give you a rain check then, Betty.
Okay.
We'll
next
give
time
you a rain
here.
Check. Yep. All right, we'd love to have you, and we'd love to meet your dear husband.
Betty, thank you. Thank you to your husband for taking the morning out. Did you wake him up early, or is he an early riser?
We always get up. You know, we're up. It's a
crack of dawn. Yep.
Wow. Well, thank you for the wonderful show.
Yeah.
And we'll talk to you soon. We'll have you on again.
Thanks a million, Betty.
Thank you.
All the best to you and your family. Thank you.
All right, we love you.
Yeah.
Take care.
Okay. All right. Richie Z takes the mystery out of Chicago. Topic, Chicago in 1890 was the beginning of The Wizard of Oz. Richie, good morning.
Good morning, Richie.
Good morning, guys. Let me get right into it. I got a lot of info here. But
okay.
L. Frank Baum wrote the novel, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, and he published it in 1890. They had a book convention at the Palmer House, which was the convention center, and in 10 days, he sold 10,000 copies. But here, L. Frank Baum moved to Chicago, Illinois in 1890, He got all his ideas for The Wizard of Oz from the 1893 World's Fair. That was the first time they ever lit up anything with light bulbs. It was the Columbian Exposition. There was 100 light bulbs on the lakefront of Chicago that were lit up, and that's where he came up with the idea of the Emerald City. Okay? That first year, they started out by publishing 15,000 or 35,000 books. They sold the 35,000, but they also added 15,000. So that first year, before it was even over, like in October, over 50,000 books were sold. You know,
hey Richie, you know, reading Betty Ann's book, do you know where Oz came from?
The file cabinet.
Yeah. You know, on the file cabinet, it said O to Z?
Yeah,
that's
wow.
Where he got
it
from.
That's so cool.
Very good, Richie. Go ahead.
Hey, you know, I want to, we had a couple of callers calling in about the Midget Club and that.
Right.
1948, it opened the bar. It was called the Midget Club. The first one opened on at 6356 Kedzie, South Kedzie Avenue. The second bar that they had opened on 63rd Street, 1/2 mile west of Pulaski. It was 4016 63rd Street. It was a real riot. I went there one time in the 80s. Everything was so cute. The bar was about 2 feet off the ground. The bar stools were about 12 or about 16 inches off the ground. The toilets were smaller, shorter, but also they had a payphone on the back wall. And the payphone was 2 feet off the ground.
Wow.
A real cool thing. Listen, I want to get into this one because people could, number one, before I go anywhere, this story I did about 10 years ago, I finally put it up. It's on my website, The Complete Hour Story. It's really something to listen to. RichieZ.com, RichieZ.com. My phone number is 312-841-2560. They have an Oz Park on the north side of Chicago. This is a wonderful story. Park District of Chicago bought this land. It's on Webster and Sheffield, that area, okay? Now, the neighborhood that Frank Baum lived in 1890 was on the north side, was in that area. So when they bought this property, the people in the neighborhood wanted it named Oz Park. So in 1974... they commissioned the park as Oz Park, the Chicago Park District did. Now, there was a school teacher that lived in that neighborhood that adored the Wizard of Oz. In 1994, she passed away and left over $100,000 to the park so that he could build the sculptures that are there. If you go to that park right now, you have the Tin Man, the Scarecrow, the Wizard of Oz, the Dorothy.
I've seen it.
I've seen it too.
Everybody's there. It's really, really something.
That's really cool.
Toddlers, you know, you can take them there. Let me see. This movie, the song Over a Rainbow, it's in 2004, they actually said it was the top movie song ever made. It's in the top 100, but it's like one of the real top songs in there.
You got your radio on, baby, huh?
Electricity to be.
We're picking up feedback.
We're picking feedback from his radio.
Now we have
Did you turn that? It's not you?
Oh, wait. Is that you on there? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you got your radio on.
Your radio's on, and we're getting feedback.
No, we're on 8:20 a.m., 8 to 9 and 10 to 11.
I had you guys on the computer. I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's all right. It's good that you're listening to us and nobody else. We have to report you.
Yeah. Where are they now?
Hey, while you're fixing that, does anybody remember, what did the Tin Man get? What did the Scarecrow get? What did the Lion get? What were the things they wanted? I don't remember. Anybody?
Well, the Lion got the medal.
Okay.
Because that was a medal meant courage.
Okay, courage. That's right. Okay.
Oh, yeah, for the Lion.
gosh, Tin Man wanted the heart, Scarecrow on the brain.
Okay. Scarecrow wanted the brain. You got it.
Didn't the Tin Man get a can of oil? I thought.
I think you're watching a different movie, Bobby.
No, he got a commercial, you know.
In the movie,
go ahead.
You guys know that the first wizard in the first in the beginning part of the beginning of the movie. Well, number one, L. Frank Baum passed away. Okay, and we had the 1933-34 World's Fair. Route 66 was just completed. People from MGM drove to Chicago to see the World's Fair of 33-34, and everybody was calling it the Emerald City. So the people from MGM in 33 went and met with Frank Baum's family out in California. They moved to California, and they purchased the right to the movie, the book right, to make the movie. Now, this was the height of the Depression. They paid $75,000 to use their book in the 1933 starting filming. That movie took around 6 years total to put together completely.
Wow.
When it was first completed, it didn't go over too well in the movie theaters. It was okay, but it really didn't. So MGM actually re-released it back in 1958. And that's when it just became a staple in the industry. They have sold over 1 million books, The Wizard of Oz. Originally by Frank Baum, it was The Wonderful Wizard of
Oz. I think it's a 1,000,003 now. I bought three of them the other day.
it's just amazing, this whole story. But the Chicago connection, we were talking about the little people, the midgets. The midget convention was held in Chicago every year. I don't know if it still is, but it was back in the day. And they had gotten a lot of people from Chicago to be in that movie.
And they got some kind of yellow brick road they put in. Brick road somewhere in Chicago, Humble Park. Are you familiar with that?
Not at all.
I saw an article, yellow brick sidewalk, 200 feet long, will be completed.
It's some housing project.
In Chicago. So it's interesting too. That
the Yellow Brick Road in the movie, in the motion picture.
Yes.
They actually just took a brick road that they already had and they painted it yellow.
Wow.
The first Tin Man in the movie was Buddy Epson. Ted Clampett from the Beverly Hillbillies. He was the first Tin Man. But back in the day, they didn't use makeup. They actually used paint. So when they painted his skin with the silver paint, he got a real bad skin infection, but he also got an eye infection where he almost lost his eye. I think he lost his eye, they said, for about 3 to 4 months.
Wow.
Before it came back. It's just an amazing movie, but it's 100% Chicago. The Wizard of Oz.
We're running out of time.
You know how the owl ties in? Then he became the millionaire with the oil?
Yeah.
And the Tin Man in the oil? You see how it ties
in?
All right, give me your number out real quick, and we got to go.
We got to go. I got a couple announcements already, too.
Okay.
Thank you.
RichieZ.com, RichieZiE.com. My phone number is 312-841-2560. Thank you for all the calls. I've been getting a lot of them from you. I really appreciate it. I love your show, guys.
And call.
Thank you, Richie.
Midnight. Go ahead.
All right, listen, listeners, I want to thank our sponsors. Also, I want to give a shout out to Lori Cullen. Her birthday's tomorrow. Happy birthday, Lori. I hope you have a great year and all the best to you. Also, I want to thank Jennings Chevrolet.
And all our sponsors.
All our sponsors.
And we don't have time to go through all of them. But
we're running out of time, but thanks for listening, and catch us next morning.
We have an author.
Next Saturday.
Rudolph Valentino. Evelyn.
8 a.m.
Zumaya. Thank you to our listeners. We love you. Have a safe, wonderful week.
Have a great week, folks. Thank you for listening.
The preceding program, Where Are They Now, is sponsored by Art Andros and Bobby Drell of Hey Listen Communications. The views and opinions therein do not necessarily reflect those of News or Radio Company or its management.